Hello, everyone. Welcome to another week of the Australian Survivor Know It Alls. I'm Nick Iadanza, and I'm so excited for you guys to be tuning in. It was a huge week. It was a huge week, and so much to talk about. A lot of stuff which was bringing back huge memories for me. So I needed to get someone who is a student of the game, and I needed to get someone who knows the ropes of Survivor Know It Alls. So I need to welcome back to the podcast my good friend and my first ever repeat guest of mine that I am interviewing, and that is the incomparable Evan Jones. Evan, welcome!
Oh, Nick, thank you. I'm excited, Nick. I am pumped. I can't believe that out of all the people you could have chosen from, I'm the first two-time representative.
You are.
Warms the cockles, yeah. The cockles of my heart.
You are
so warm.
Now, Mike Bloom has been on twice, but not with twice with me. He filled in for me. You are my first repeat interviewer, my first repeat recapper.
I feel like the best way that you could sum it up talking with me is sort of like making love to a barbed wire fence. You know, it's a hell of an experience, and it's quite a story to tell after you've done it. It's going to be a good show.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
I don't even know where to go after that analogy.
It's going to be big. Yeah. Listen, if someone like LP said it would be different, wouldn't it? They all come into tribal, someone gets voted out, and, you know, he's like, well, you know, the game can go any way. Sort of like making love to a barbed wire fence, twists and turns, and someone ends up hurt. Like, it could be anything. You know,
Evan,
when he says
Evan,
it could be anything.
Your JLP is so good. It's so
It's because
spoiler.
I love him.
Oh, my God.
It's because
God.
When I was out there and I kissed him and they didn't show it, I think I got his voice inside of me. And who doesn't want a bit of LP inside of them? So, you're a beautiful man.
It's like The Little Mermaid. It's like you stole a part of his voice. I'm loving this. And you did a great little video on Facebook. I don't know if any of the fans saw that, but you did a great video. And do you want to just give us your JLP intro to the season?
His intro to the season.
The thing that you did.
He does it in a does it in a few parts. He does that little weird step over the rock, you know, like he doesn't know the rock's there.
A prance.
He sort of sways a bit back and forward. And it's always the thing where he does the thing where it's like 24 castaways on a desert island in Samoa, 55 days, one sole survivor. This is Australian Survivor. But then when he gets to the mat, Nick, that's when the gold happens. That's when the gold
Matt
happens
chat.
Because people are coming in on the trucks, and then he tries to sell people, you know. So it's a bit like does a bit like, you know, you could be a lion farmer, a barrel racer. Or an attractive person. How many attractive people are on this year? Like, man, they make us look like gargoyles.
We are the season one gargoyles. And
we were the people to get people in so that people would go, oh, they're like us. And now there's all these goddesses and, like, gods, and it's just like we were hideous. Like, oh, my God.
Oh,
like,
God.
Even Castle Dynamics average compared to these people.
Evan, keep the impressions coming throughout the podcast. Let's just kind of set up what it is that we're going to be doing here. So we got a couple of episodes to debrief on. If you didn't check out the last week's show with JL, loved chatting with her, a good friend of mine. You can see it comes through. We know each other quite well, and there was a lot of great banter. So check that out. I did
topical.
Yes.
Topical because of the whole switch, man. There's the feng shui that's going with the switch.
Exactly.
So, yes.
We had the great exit interview with Mark and Sam. It went up a little bit later, but definitely check that out. That was
two beautiful people, by the way. They're fantastic human beings.
I see that you've been hanging out with them.
Yeah, well, you know, I've only met them the few times, but you know, when you hug Mark for the first time, like you get trapped.
He's no gargoyle.
He ain't no gargoyle. You get trapped in his physique. They're both very, very good people, and I'm spewing we didn't see more of them because they had so much more to give.
Spewing.
So much more.
Spewing.
That's the game.
That's the word of the season, spewing. There's also I did a Survivor asked me to do a Facebook Live on the Australian Survivor Facebook page. I did that with Matt. That was a great 20-minute little Facebook chat. Of people's questions, really good stuff. So check that out. And some. Really?
And I like that they had the backdrop for that was actually Samoa and not somewhere in Adelaide because, come on, let's be honest. Come on, let's be fair. City of churches in the background or a palm tree, I don't know.
Wait, gargoyles sit on churches, okay?
That's true.
All right, Evan, we had a huge week. We had the first big shakeup of the season. We're going to start with that. That was the biggest story that's come out of this week. First of all, were you expecting there to be a twist? Because I know a lot of people thought that after our twisty season that it was just going to be double the twists, and by now we would have had like 17 swaps and 8 tribes and 15 casts, you know, outcasts. And so I'm surprised there was some restraint that they waited until like, you know, day 20 or whatever it was.
I think what they did differently is they put more advantages and clues and sort of like, here's a gift of how to play Survivor compared to ours, like early on, you know, like hiding clues under a water well, like for God's sake, come on. But I think they did have good restraint to wait for this, which is good. But, I knew it was going to be a swap. Like, to be honest, it worked last time, even though I hate it. Like, I am so violently opposed to it.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to talk about. So you didn't like the twist because...
Well, like for TV purposes, I get it. Like, and I love the people that put this show together. They do a great job, but... For me, Survivor is you go to tribal, you get voted out, you go home. And I struggle with, you know, someone like AK with that switch. Like, he's orchestrated these moves and then all of a sudden he gets disadvantaged by it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I don't like that side of it. On the positive side, we get to see people like you, you know, go on and have a second chance and get to do what you're doing now and see how you can impact on the game. And I'm sure we're going to see that with Annalise and Tara. You know, they're good people, they're good characters, but I just don't agree with it. You go to tribal, you get voted out, you go home. That's just my personal opinion. Yeah. And it always will be.
Yeah, look, I feel like I'm in one of those weird positions because I'm someone who benefited greatly. I benefited the most out of the twist last year.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk all about that, but that doesn't mean that I don't have an opinion on this, and I've got a really strong opinion that I did not like it, and I'm with you. I'm with you. But before we get to what is it that we didn't like, let's just kind of talk. Why does Survivor AU need to have these twists, which the American season doesn't have? What is it that forces them to have these non-elimination episodes, these extra twists, etc.?
I think it's a combination of the fact that it's 55 days, you know, like, and they've got an episode quota they've got to do. And also over 55 days, there's probably the fear that stuff won't happen, you know, like that it will draw out a bit. And also, too, they are accommodating, too, and no offense to the general mug punter that watches the show, but it's a different audience. Like, the American one's been established for years. They've got a core audience that knows the show back to front. You don't need to change the format. Whereas with Australia, you know, they're trying to get people over from MasterChef, people from The Bachelor, that are used to these sort of sensationalized things that pop up. So I think the idea originally was like, let's shake things up. But if they were going to do it, I'd prefer it sort of like the first season and maybe not at tribal. Maybe you'll line them up at the beach and see the conflict there. You know, you got to get rid of two people to swap. You've got to get rid of two people.
Evan, and it's this you're big, speaking you know, my language.
That's what I would have loved because then you're not really changing with tribal. I just think when you walk into tribal, that's it. That's tense. You see the theatre of it. You see how hard people have played. I just think when you step into tribal, that's a no-no for me. And it was a bit, to be honest, it was a bit lame. I felt sorry for LP that he had to say to Tara, you know, but you're not going yet. We're getting another person. And it's like, well, you're not going to send them both out like this. Yeah. Like it's just,
But one of the things is that Australian Survivor has 26 episodes. It needs 26 episodes. That's the order. And there are 24 people. So there has, with the final three in the finale, there needs to be some non-elimination episodes. And guys, strap yourself in. There's going to be more coming. There will be. When they said, Tara, you know, you were going to be voting out someone else, and then it was Annalise, like, Australian Survivor can't do doubles. You know, Australian Survivor cannot afford a double vote. So they should have known in that moment. And I wonder how many of them out there were actually like, okay, well, clearly there can't be a double. You have to just assume that there's not going to be, because they've said that there isn't. So you just kind of hope that it's not, because you're not going to be able to predict exactly what's going to happen. But, you know, I think, you know, like you said, it's a 55-day game. They need to shake it up a couple of times before the merge. But the other thing is, I think last year was hugely successful. Like the way that they did it, and again, this sounds biased because I was a part of it and it saved me, but there was that got a lot of traction in the media about how this was the biggest thing. You know, American Survivor fans, American Survivors, you know, Robin, Steven, everyone, you know, I think they were saying that Robin, Steven were talking with childlike glee or something like that. But there was that everyone thought that that was a really interesting twist. And because of that, and because of the storylines that it created, the animosity that it developed, especially with me, I think they thought we're going back to that well. But like, have they flogged a dead horse? Like, could they have figured out a different way to do it? Probably.
Mm. I like the one where you do something like this. If you're going to do something different, you line up everyone on the beach and their two tribes, and you go, you're voting one person out right now from each of your tribes right now. Who's it going to be? What's the conflict? Yeah?
Yes.
And then when those two people get voted out, you say to both of those people, all right, you now get to do a schoolyard pick. Who's on your squad?
Yeah.
And then they get to go back and forth with who they want, completely shake up the tribes. And that would just be a different way of dropping your buffs. And it would also create conflict because those two people that get kicked out go, oh, I'm at the bottom, you know? So it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, just something different like that, perhaps, you know?
I'm sure they brainstormed so many different ways, and I just don't think that this was the way to settle on it. And I want to talk about why I think it's unfair, because I got a lot of tweets saying like, oh, they got Idanzed, and this is kind of like what happened to you. And people were tweeting Connor and all this stuff. Like, this was the Connor Nick thing. But it's different. It's so different, Evan, and I don't know if you agree, and I don't know what you thought of last season's twist, and many people did think that was unfair as well, and I understand that. I was the beneficiary, so I'm just going to go with it, right? But it's different. It's different to last year, and it's different because of this, that Vivao and Sinapu were two tribes that arrived at tribal council together, okay? They both went through we both went through the process of voting someone out, right? We both
at the same time.
Exactly. At the same time, there was animosity that was developing. There was Flick and Connor were arguing. There was a blind side, you know, technically not a blind side of me. There was this whole kind of dynamic on both sides. So then when I was saved and Connor was saved and we swapped, no tribe was disadvantaged. They both were advantaged and both disadvantaged. Everyone got the same treatment. Now, Agano was a different story, but everyone that was involved in that, there was an equal playing field, right? And there was an equal amount of animosity. The problem and why this is unfair is it is so, like you said, it is unfair to AK and his alliance in turn, and Survivor's not fair, so it doesn't really matter, but like it's so lopsided because it creates huge animosity, votes two people out, and two people who were on the bottom and already had feelings of animosity, they now go to the other tribe. Great. But the fact that where it was ruined and where it could have been saved was exactly like you said. They line the Asanga up at the beach and they say two people have to swap, but they let people volunteer.
Yeah. You can't. Absolutely.
They should not have been the point. It should have been the exact same thing as the first episode of Survivor Token Chain. Everyone gets a piece of paper. You're voting someone out. Who's it going to be?
Yeah.
And no chance to strategize, no chance to scramble. You know, we've just come from, Samantau. They've done that. Now you have to do it too. And who are the names that come up? No one would be on the same page. And the animosity that would create would be huge. And then you swap them. So it's kind of similar to what we did last season, but there's a different element to it because you're voting two people out straight away. And I just think it makes it so much more unfair.
Maybe cross your fingers. Maybe that's coming. Who knows?
It could be.
But I know what you mean. I hear where you're coming from with that one. And, you know, it's these schools of thought where, you know, obviously the people that don't get the swap think to themselves, far out, why could that not have been me? You know what I mean? But I think what's important is some people are going, oh, producers save certain people. If you were a producer, you'd want to save Mark and Sam. Like you just would, you know, like if you were rigging it, you'd save those two. Like, yeah. Come on.
I understand. But I've got a point. I've got a point on that.
There's nothing to do with like rigging or anything like that, how some people think it is. It's just where they've picked the time to do it. But I think also, too, it advantages, you know, Henry and Ben had a really big advantage there where they're like, oh, wow, we can get off that tribe. I'm surprised no one's talking about how decimated that's made, you know, Asanga now.
Physically.
I'm surprised people aren't really clicking that that's a big loss for them and they've got probably a tribe that doesn't have the most physical players now.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I agree. And the fact it decimates them physically, but it advantages them in the game because if we think about it, there's no animosity that comes from the swap in Asanga, right? So that's now 8 people plus the 2 people that joined of Tara and Annalise who aren't going to work with that alliance of 5 with AK and Zingy and that. That's not fair. That's just a really shitty way to do it.
It's like a weird way of doing mutiny, you know, like when they did in Cook Islands where Penner and, you know, Co jumped on the mat and then it's like far out, they're stuffed.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, I think probably the other thing with that is too, is that, I don't know, I struggle more with just getting back to the pure basics. You were voted out. And then you benefit from it greatly from being outplayed. Like that for me goes against the fabric of what Survivor is. If you are outplayed and you are voted out, you are gone. Yet, it, you know, what's quite interesting is it seems when all these things happen, of course they go over as floating pieces.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt, like in my mind from watching the edit, I reckon Tara's going to go really far. I don't think she's going to win, but she's going to go really far. So, yes, it's luck, but then I think, geez, it's a bit rotten luck on the other side.
Yeah, look, and again, like I said, I understand. I was the beneficiary. So, I got another 20 plus days in the game because of it, and I know that
you made the merge, brother. You got to the merge, man.
I know
you
that if got I had that one
dream, you got your own podcast show, man. you got the dream.
Yeah, look, if I had won, I know there would have been a huge asterisk next to mine. I never was going to win. But if I had won, everyone would be like, oh, that person was voted out. So I understand that. But, like, can we just go back to what you said about the rigging thing, right? At no point do I believe that it was rigged, okay? And I believe that Survivor is a very above-board kind of thing. But I want to draw your attention to something. Last year when I was saved by the twist, family and friends mostly would come up to me and be like, oh, they did that to save you because they wanted to keep you. And while that's highly flattering, it's definitely not the case because, and this is the other problem with the twist. Last year, there was a preemptive mechanism built into the game to prove that it wasn't just on a producer's whim to save someone because both tribes went to tribal council at the same time, right? It was clear that it was built into the fabric of the season. And it's the same thing as like the bottle in Cook Islands, where there's, you know, here's the bottle, what's it inside, you open it at tribal council, blah, 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 blah. There was a mechanism built in to prove that it wasn't just done on a whim. And, you know, now they can't really defend themselves. The show can't defend. I'm sure the show doesn't really care either, but I'm sure the show can't defend itself and say that that was not just kind of something they did to save Tara or whatever, because there's no way to prove that. There was nothing that led up towards it that said, you know, here's a note or there's a, you know, if you win this immunity, you get a huge reward or something like that. I just thought it was really strange.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a, it was odd how they did it. Let's hope that, like, it does create drama and
definitely,
it does create conflict. And I still like seeing conflict originate organically than forced conflict. That's just my opinion. But it's a great show. We love it. We still watch it. And that's what's awesome about it because we can debate about it and talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and I think what do you think the show was hoping for? What do you think? That's the last thing I want to talk about, just that first part of the twist.
Okay.
What do you think the show was going for?
I think they were just trying to recapture the magic that they had last time, to be honest, because it did get a good response, whether people liked it or not. And
I mean specifically in this scenario, like, so say that the Summer Tower head to tribal council, what did they, because there's some close votes there, you know, like someone could have been flipping and then there was, you know, there was a second vote. And what do you think the dynamic was that they were hoping for?
I just think that they just pure and simply wanted to create conflict so that there's a – it's a very Australian thing, you know, the underdog, them versus us. And we are so underdog-driven. There is nothing more underdog than being voted out and going to the bottom of another tribe.
Yeah, I didn't get that edit.
No, but you know what I mean? Like whoever goes across is the underdog, you know, even though you were still an underdog, man. Like whether people looked at you and liked you or not, or how it was edited to portray whether you were liked or not, you were still the underdog.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I guess.
And then there's that arc of development and all that stuff with people. So I think as Aussies, it's all about the underdog.
I think that they were hoping for Tara to go on the first vote, and I think that they were hoping for AK to go on the second. And that it would be Atara and AK spend the night at Exile and move over, bring their animosity and their beef to the next tribe. I really think that's what they were going for. But who knows?
But as you said, it's not pre-prepared, so they couldn't even know who was going there.
Yeah, I just think that if they kind of, the producers got to write down what their wish was, I think that's what they were wishing for.
Yeah.
Let's move to the second part of the twist, which, and this drew probably like even more comments after the second episode. So now we're in episode 9. You know, Annalise and Tara arrive at the beach. They bring in Asunga, and JLP says that someone needs to be voted out. So, yes, you can volunteer, blah, 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 blah. What would you have done in that situation? Say you, Evan Jones, same kind of trajectory as last year. Yep. You're on Asunga. Would you have volunteered, or would you have just kind of shut your mouth, or what would you have done?
It's all situational. Gee whiz, if I was thinking about my place in the tribe was like Ben, I'd want to get out of there.
Yeah.
Like I reckon he made the right move for himself.
Definitely.
And I would have looked at the other tribe and gone, far out. They look like they're going to win the next few challenges. Get me out of here. And plus two, you have to look at, not that it matters that much, but still gender ratio can dictate votes when people get desperate. And you know, Henry's is an interesting one, because I think Henry's going with playing it like if the game provides him with something, he's going to take that risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, my view in Survivor is that big risk, big reward, and I'd rather take a risk than do no risk.
Mm.
But where he was going from a really, you know, potentially powerful spot with his idol and at least some solidarity there to a place of unknown. And even though he has the idol, I still think most people in the other tribe would have looked at him and gone, far out, this guy keeps winning over there. Like, he keeps winning challenges. We can't keep him around. I understand his logic. I don't know if I would have done it if I was Henry, but I applaud him for doing it. Like,
yeah.
there's a part of me that I know if I was out there, I might have just instinctively said, yep, yeah, I'm going.
Yeah.
Because it is a long game. It's 55 days, man. Like, it's not like it's over in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, look, I agree that so first of all, we all agree. Ben made the right move. He's clearly low man on the totem pole. He seems like someone who just wants to kind of like, he wants to get involved and have the fun of it. He probably hasn't been having the best time. It seems like he's really squarely on the bottom. Good move for Ben.
What a deep voice.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't hear from him. And then when he speaks, like, really deep voice. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, that he said about, you know, I wouldn't have her as a mother, even though, you know, that is my mother's name. Like, I was just like, this is incredible to hear how deep his voice is.
I wish we were getting more of Ben, and I hope that now that he's swapped, we get more. But Henry has come through and eclipsed all his airtime again, and Henry decides to move over. And it's a big move, like you said, high risk, high reward. I think that he's just so itching to play. Like, he's
he said that a few weeks ago, man.
Yeah.
Where he said, like, he threw challenges just to play the game, which, in my view, I would have kept Mark and Sam for as long as possible, man. Like, if they go to emerge, they're the ones that people want off first.
Yeah.
Like, I always think about shields. Like, I think he's just removing his shields, man.
Yeah,
like,
this is his strategy of he wants to get rid of all the big threats, but he's too big of a threat to do that. Like, you can't do that. That's not going to work, I don't think.
And it's hard because I really like what Henry's doing. And I like him as a Survivor player, but I worry for him. I think he's going to burn out. Like, he won't have any more moves to do.
Yeah.
And having an idol, that doesn't mean anything. Like, when Luke tried to make the move to get rid of Jackie, that could have easily gone his way.
Yeah.
Like, and he didn't play his idol. So it's tough.
He's
ticking time bomb.
Yeah, he's itching to play. The idol's burning a hole in his pocket. He was willing to throw a challenge and use an idol like 3 votes into the game to get rid of Sam. He's he's playing big, and I actually love Henry as a character. I think he's a good boy.
Oh, yeah,
I think
course.
He's got to be someone. I think he's creates great TV. I love the way he thinks about the game.
Anyone that refers to themselves as Jesus, you can take him two ways.
I might look like Jesus, but I'm playing like the devil. That was the quote. I loved it.
Hands down, that is the lamest and worst quote we will hear all season.
I loved it.
But I thought, good on you. You know, like, he's of course he looks like Jesus.
His strategy, what he said, and the reason why he says it, he goes, I have complete control of the Sanga, and, you know, that's been proven. Like, it's not completely disproven, but that's been.
I reckon that's 50-50. It was shifting on him. It was really shifting.
It was definitely shifting, but does that make the move even better? That he was sensing that it was maybe shifting. And, you know, him and Jackie were getting far too much heat. He came out unscathed the first time. He got a little bit of blowback with Luke and Jericho voting against, you know, Jackie the second time. Could he see the writing on the wall and he was willing to switch things up because he's got the idol as protection? Now, we know the idol is not always going to protect you, but, you know, it emboldened him to make that move. And I don't know. I loved the move from a TV perspective, but do you know why I didn't like about it? And I think this has been overlooked in all the things I've seen people write and say. When he gets to Summer Tower, how do you explain that? His explanation, I'm sure there was more to it, but his explanation seems so lackluster. Oh, yeah, I thought I'd come and see something different. What? And AK's so right to be skeptical of that.
Yeah, you don't come over for any reason. And I think the best way to do is almost like that Russell Hance one that he created in Heroes vs. Villains, is that I'm here because the girls are picking off the guys. Like, that could last for a while. He could have just said, the girls are decimating us over there. I didn't want Mark gone. They got rid of him. You know, I'm really worried. I'm hoping to work with you guys and be strong. Like, it might look all hunky-dory over there. Now, listen, AK probably wouldn't have believed that because he's very astute. But it would have been a little bit more believable than I'm just going over here to hang out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, in these situations, do you lie? So, AK, and I've
absolutely.
Been, I've been, but, absolutely but I've been singing. Lie. Well, hold on a second. I've been singing AK's praises for the last few weeks. I love AK. He's my favorite character so far. I think he views the game in a really interesting way. But he goes to Henry and says, I'm on the bottom. You know, I'm on the bottom. Work with me, or whatever it was that he said. I don't think that was right, AK. I really, really don't, because...
Okay, what should have he said? I'm Henry. I come up to you and I say to you, you know, I might look like Jesus, but I'm actually the devil. What would you say in response to me? AK pitch?
I have no idea, but maybe something like, look, we've got a really good thing going on here with this group. There are people who are below you. Join us. Join us. Where we have an overwhelming majority. You're not going to be able to make anything happen with the people on the bottom. You are safe. You are safe with me. I know you. We're Adelaide boys. Come join me and my little core of people. We can bring over your little core of people over there, and we are moving forward in a direction that people won't expect. I think that to lie to Henry is the wrong move, because Lockie can fact check you. And he's going to, and he did.
He did. He did. He did. Helder, I don't know, man. I see some sides of it that maybe, you know, AK is a mover and shaker too. He's a risk taker. He's definitely trying to establish definitely perhaps that, you know, and what does, you know, it's tough. I know what you mean, because Lockie did fact check, but, you know, maybe, you know, if Henry comes back to AK, maybe AK can still say the same thing. Nah, Lockie's making stuff up, man. I don't know. You're right. It is fraught with danger lying, but you got to try something. And perhaps, you know, AK looks at himself. He's very good at self-reflection and how he appears to other people. So I think sometimes self-deprecating yourself and underselling yourself makes, in some way, you seem not as a threat anyway.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, does Henry Henry obviously now thinks that AK is in charge and he's switched on, but it's going to be a battle between those two now.
It is. And I look, Evan, I've been there. I went from a tribe to the other tribe, and I had to assess, what do I say right here? Do I spill the beans and say everything completely honest about what happened, or do I keep it under my lid? And do you know what I thought? I am saying it all completely honest. This is, if I've already stared death in the face, I've had my torch nearly snuffed out. Do I be completely honest, or do I try and make more liars and try and get out of this? So when I arrived at Sinapu that night, I laid it all out there. I said, I was in alliance with these people. I got the idol clue. I made up a fake clue to tell them. I did it for A, B, C, and D. I gave reasons why. And I just had to hope that that trust was going to get me through, that I was full disclosure, because clearly I was voted out for a reason, right?
That is true. And if other people come over, then you're going to be exposed in some way.
And all it would have taken was Tegan. All it would have taken was Tegan to go, that's not actually true. And it just made such a better basis of the relationship. So if you're in a situation like this, especially on Australian Survivor, where there's a swap and then another swap and whatever, and then a merge, I feel like you have to play the long game a little bit, and you can't be peppering too many lies around there, because it will catch up to you. You know, this is
day 20, isn't it?
There's still like a whole nother American season coming. Like, they're about to
play. It is funny, isn't it, how like it's all about deception, yet more often than that, the honesty propels people forward.
Yeah.
Like in the crucial moments, the sliding door moments, it's the honesty that more often than not wins out, which is ironic, because as we obviously see it, we think it's all about deception and lying, but it's the honesty. And listen, Kent, what a character. He did make a very prophetic line the other night where he said about that, you know, you have to trust individuals. You know what I mean? Like you must trust. So it's interesting. It just seems like the movers and shakers are picking out their radar, you know, and they're knowing who's a threat. And I just want to see two movers and shakers team up. Yeah. I don't want to see them taking each other out.
Yeah.
Like, work together. Like, man, if I ever went out there again, that would be what I would do. I'd be like, movers and shakers, we've got to stick together.
Yeah.
Like, we've got to do this. Yeah.
Yeah, look, lots of great stuff to talk about with those. We could probably talk forever, but there were so many other cool things that we could talk about. Let's circle back to the beginning of the episode 8, and we've just come back from Mark getting voted out, and Jericho. Jericho is angry. He is angry. And what does he do? He pours the water on the fire.
Thoughts? He goes full JT almost, you know, just throws the water. Yeah, wow.
What's your thoughts on that?
I just thought, like, good on him. It's pretty ballsy trying to do that when people can actually hear
the sizzle.
But you know what? I liked Mark and I didn't want him to go. So the fan of me was like, good on you, Jericho. You know, like, yeah, let's see how they go without Mark, you know, without lighting the fire. But it's funny, that came out of nowhere for me.
Yes.
I'm like, they hadn't really established a relationship. What we're seeing from Jericho is he's a bit cheeky. So is he going to be this cheeky character we just follow the whole way through? You know, he's going to do some cheeky things here and there. Fraught with danger, that. Like, what happens if everyone woke up and said, man, what are you doing? You're next.
Yeah.
But there might be stuff that we're not seeing.
Look, but, there's something, nothing, no, like one thing that's for sure, Jericho has a set of cojones on him.
Yeah.
He's eating cookies in front of people. He's sprinkling cookie dust on others. He's putting the fire out right in front of them. He just seemed, he seemed so angry, but to me the anger seemed misplaced because, and again, we didn't get the whole picture. So Jericho, if you're listening, I'm sure there was more to it. But we see him share the cookies with Henry and Sarah. We don't see him share that stuff with Mark. So all of a sudden he's so angry at Mark. But I completely got the read wrong on what he was saying at Tribal Council last week when he said, don't vote for vengeance. I thought when he said, don't vote for vengeance, steer the course and vote out Mark. Well, it seems like he was saying, don't vote for vengeance.
Oh, no, man. I picked that as, like, don't vote for vengeance. Like, don't vote Mark out because you just want to get him out after getting Sam out. Yeah. I saw it the other way. I always thought that Luke and Jericho were voting together with him.
Yeah, but I thought that was smoke and mirrors what he was saying. I completely read it wrong, and he really did seem quite pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He did.
What did you think, though, and this was an interesting moment, and I was trying to think of some parallels in US Survivor. What did you think about when they arrive at the reward and everyone has this huge reaction that Mark's been voted out, and then Jonathan asks Jericho and he says that it was unnecessary and it shouldn't have happened? What did you think about that?
I thought, once again, as you said, it was pretty ballsy to say that.
Yeah.
Potentially, who knows, maybe they all had an airing of grievances that we didn't see. But Yeah, you're throwing yourself out on the line there. You're basically putting a line in the sand. You're almost saying, well, Luke and I are on the bottom because you all voted a different way. However, I liked it from this sense because he probably knows that there's a merge or something shaking up. Now, if you're astute and switched on the other side, you go, oh, there's dissent here, and this person is not happy that that happened. So he's the first person I'm going to go up to when they merge because he wasn't happy with Mark going. So there's someone I can work with. So yeah. I think he's smart, Jericho. I don't think he does things in front of others for no reason. I think there is a reason behind it.
Future Survivor players, when you are getting ready to go and walk into a reward challenge after someone has been voted out from the other tribe, prepare your face to not be shocked so that JLP will not ask you a question and prepare the question that he could ask you to give the most diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
Like the night that Andy was voted out and then everyone walked back, Val walks back in and I see that Andy's gone and Craig was gone the week after. I was just trying to kind of like, I was trying to maintain my excitement that these people who had voted me out were gone. But, you know, it's really, really tricky. So Future Survivor players, definitely do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to keep that poker face on.
Yeah.
You know, like me when I tried to lie about making fire, like just hold the face.
Yeah.
You know? Like don't, and then, you know, don't get thrown under the bus by a beautiful model. Like just come on, man. Like just hold your face. You know, like that's at least one thing you can do. That is the best place to lie.
Yeah.
That's the best place because you can't really be questioned by anyone.
I've got another tip for Future Survivor players. And I thought about this when I was watching Luke and Jericho. If you're the only one who can make the fire, put the fire out on purpose. Your stock will rise. Like Luke became the hero. You know, well, I guess that's what the music made us think. But like, you know, everyone was waiting to do Flint and then he came in and did it. Is this a strategy? Is this emergent strategy, Evan? Mm. Put the fire out so you can do it.
Well, it does increase your stocks. Like if you can absolutely do it, hey, why not? If you back yourself in, you become very, very valuable. But you know what? After a while, it doesn't matter how many fish you can catch or how much fire you can start. No one gives a stuff.
Yeah.
They just want you out.
They just want you out.
Like it doesn't matter how hard you work around camp. Look at all the people that are getting dragged this season. Like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. But when I went to Sanapu, no one knew how to start a fire and I was the one who did. And Kylie was so keen on me teaching her how to do it. And I just was always so busy. I couldn't teach her. I've got to go. I can't. You know, keep those skills for yourself.
Well, her career was putting fires out.
Exactly. Exactly. What did you think of, you know, so we had the challenge, loving the challenges this season. There was they had to hold all the ropes and keep the ball up floating. Luke looked like he wanted to bash Ben because he was so bad at it. Love that. But do you believe that the producers of Survivor Season 2 have a little thing with balls?
Man, they love balls.
They love some balls this season.
There's so many balls. There was the football kicking challenge. There was the balancing of the balls.
There was the big giant ball that Jared was on.
There was Jericho's balls putting things out. You know, there was people are playing with balls. People are trying to show that they got big balls.
The best balls of all was Luke.
Oh,
Luke,
man.
Shaving his balls at a reward challenge. Oh my God.
What a listen, I will need a little segment to talk about my love for Luke.
Go for it. It's your podcast. Go.
Well, man, can I just say that when he first burst onto our scenes, I think he was unfairly characterized as a jester and a clown.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love that. I'm the boss. You know, I love that stuff. Like, because that's confessional time. You know, that's not you how you are all the time. And mark my words, if you watch how his arc is going, he for me was like, we'll get to it, but he was player of the week for me.
Okay.
Like, he got what he wanted and no one thought about voting him out.
Yeah.
Everyone thought that it was beautiful Sarah.
Yes.
Like they all thought that it was her. How brilliant. And he has subtly done things. He did things where he was like, oh, let's go over and get this log so that he could go and talk with, you know, Annalise and things like that. He's doing so many subtle things that the general person is not picking up on. And all they're seeing is this larger than life guy. He got Jackie out. He wanted her out. He tried to save Mark, he couldn't. So he had no one with him. And yet he then, I know, through a tribe swap, but then he is still able to get Jackie out. Like, I think he played phenomenally this week, and I think people are going to see how much of a good player he is because he's doing stuff. He's doing stuff subtly. He's doing stuff very subtly.
It's funny you say that. In my exit interview with Mark, and you guys should check that out if you haven't, he talks about how, you know, he was so good at just like being completely disarming, and then all of a sudden he could just click his fingers and switch into like strategy talk, and it would just pop out of nowhere that you would just kind of go with it because it just seems so organic.
Yes.
And I think that's we've definitely seen that. That's been a huge part of his success.
And listen, let's look at the beauty of people. He's a beautiful person. Like, he is a happy-go-lucky person. And I think, hey, being out there with him, I don't know what it's like being out there with him. People might find him grating every now and then, but we're all grating when we're out there. So I can't wait to see how his journey goes, because I'm a big fan of what he's doing subtly. Everyone's seeing the big character, but yeah. I think that approach of a big character and making people laugh is a, you know, that's a better ruse than a yoga teacher. Like, you know.
Well, riddle me this. For someone who hates people calling the shots, he sure likes calling the shots.
Lukey boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But isn't that's what life is? Like, if I'm someone that likes calling the shots, I don't want other people calling the shots.
Yeah.
So that's just how it goes.
Eventually it's going to catch up with him.
Oh, like, listen, it breaks my heart. I'd love to see Luke get to the end and win this whole thing. I would, because I would love to see it, because I think he's got so many strings to his bow that people aren't seeing. But I do think it will be difficult for him, more so that he is a nice guy. I don't think many people are going to come out of this season and go, I don't like Luke.
Yeah, he gets away with saying like whatever he wants, because I think he's got a really strong social demeanor, definitely.
But is he a mean person? I don't think he's an actual mean person.
I don't think there are many mean people in Survivor.
No. But what I'm trying to say is that people will walk out, and I don't think they'll hold grudges against that guy.
Yeah.
So it will get to a point where people will go, we cannot have him at the end because people love him.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Like, I can't see him getting all the way to the day 55. I personally want him around for quite a while because he's great TV, but I don't really see him sitting on the Iron Throne at the end in my dream scenario. But he says, you know, my pockets are filled with people who are willing to go my way, and that may or may not be the case, but it seems like it's the case. Like, not all of his plans have worked, but some of them have. You mentioned...
No, I was just about to say, but there's big talk from everyone at the moment. It seems everyone's got a bit of power. Everyone's saying, I'm in control.
Oh, but everyone hates really worried. People who were cocky.
I know. I'm really worried about Henry, because the edit we're getting is him constantly saying that he's in control, he's safe, he's not going home. We're going to show people how powerful we are. And I feel like that's an arc where it's going to stop. But then again, we've had many big talkers before that have gone right through to the end and won. So
I can't see Henry or AK. I can't see both of them making the merge. It's one or the other. Like, we are brewing. It's my two favorites. It's a complete travesty, but we are brewing. The AK versus Henry thing is brewing. I'm going to plant my flag. I as much as it pains me to say, I think the twist and Henry moving over to Samatau is going to be the undoing of AK. I'm saying it now.
Well, so how does he go? Does he get idled out?
I have a feeling that it's going to be some sort of Ben Lockie, what's his name, Henry thing with some sort of idol play that's involved, and an AK bites the dust. I just can't see. He's survived so far. He's had such a good game. There is so much more that I bet he is doing behind the scenes that we are not getting. We're getting the AK's lazy storyline, but we're not getting how much work he's doing, I think.
Well, man, we all fit stereotypes, don't we? You know, and we all fit narratives. Like, they're not going to show someone like me or you being real muscular and cutting down trees, even though we did a lot of that. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to show that because we don't fit that stereotype. So it's the same as AK. He's mentioned before that he had a photo recently in the paper and he looked like a plus size model. Like, he's got a great sense of humor. His words, not mine. And I thought they were very funny. They're not going to show the plus size model, you know, being really active around camp.
The couch potato.
Maybe. Maybe.
Well, that brings us. This is a good segue. Let's go to Samatau. Oh, sorry, Samatar.
Samatar.
If you're on the tribe and you can't pronounce the tribe's name properly, Tara, figure it out. It's Samatau. So we have this whole storyline of Lockie. We get this, you know, this whole set piece of, you know, Lockie, you know, we get the swelling music, we get the close up of his family tattoo.
We also get from Lockie the most, I feel sorry for him. They keep showing him saying the most obvious things ever. Like, he's like one of those MasterChef contestants that says, you know, if I don't get the chicken in the oven, I'm not going to get the chicken in the oven. Like, Lockie's beautiful. I hope he goes really far. And he's trying really hard from his position as well. And I think he's got real good mental awareness. He's not just brawn.
Yes.
But the other day he said something like, you know, you've got to survive out here. That's why they call it Survivor. And it's like, why did they pick that from him? Like, that's just like too obvious. Like,
I think Lockie's getting, like, he's getting a very positive edit. Like, and
oh, he's a hero. That's his
just,
edit. He's a
it's
hero.
It's just this abs, and it's nothing against Lockie because I'm sure Lockie is awesome, right? But it is just Australia's fetish with Aussie blokes. And I just, and I've spoken about it before.
You're just an angry Italian. That's what you are. You're just a bitter and twisted Western Oriental gentleman, you are.
That might be. No, that is not it. It is just this idea that, like, if you are super tall, super buff, good looking, adventurous, and Australian, everyone in Australia must defer to you as the be all and end all. And it happened last season. It happens. It's happening this season. It happens in my daily life. I'm sure it happens in your daily life.
Well, listen, I see myself as one of those people you've just described. So.
Where is your strength and honor tattoo?
Well, listen, I like to see the good in people, and I do also look at it this way. Do you think that they're representing Lockie as a mental prowess player? Maybe not. So it also works on other sides as well.
Like, I agree. And this is nothing against Lockie. This is nothing against Lockie.
No, like, no, I know that. I'm talking about stereotypes.
Yes,
so,
it's about,
you know,
the stereotype.
For the person that's apparently a super fan, they get portrayed like they're really smart. And if they vote someone out, they're, you know, they're real cerebral, when, hey, it might have just been the smart thing to do.
Yeah. Like, no, that's a really good point.
Or the obvious thing to do. And whereas, like, you know, when there's a muscular person, they're not painted as if they're smart. Like,
but we live in this society, Evan, where that is not valued. Smart and ability to kind of, like, that is to communicate, and that is not valued. And it's just, it comes through on reality TV.
But would you say that it is being valued this season? Like, let's be honest.
Well, no, because AK is lazy and AK is the villain. And
But everyone is saying he is so smart. He is running this game. He's got all this power. So I still don't think he's been shown as like some slob that can't do anything.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to play.
Yeah, I get it. It's a really good point you make. Yeah.
They're trying to play the whole, it's just a them versus us thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they've got to pick something to clash over.
I guess Lockie isn't getting a good edit when he thinks, and I don't know how many people this registers with, but he said, he goes, oh, I've never been on the bottom in anything. You know, and it's like, well, boo bloody who. Like, now you know how the rest of us mere mortals feel, us absolute plebs.
When he said that, I had a little wry smile, because I'm sure there must have been some times in his life where he might have been on the bottom. So, and, you know, he's a very handsome fellow. So I think that was a bit of a lie. I thought, come on, Lockie, don't be bashful here. I think you've seen many different positions, and the bottom – of somewhere may have been.
Wait, the battle of the bottoms. Weren't him? It was he's not on the bottom. I'm on the bottom.
The balls would have been involved either way. So, you know.
I just thought it was funny when he's like, you know, I've never been, you know, bad at anything. He goes, why are they following AK and not me? It's like you could see the cogs turning in his brain. Like, what do you mean? Everyone always listens to what I say. Like, has my whole life been a lie? Like, I'm popular. Like, it just was just such a funny moment for me. I thought it was great.
And on the flip side, I do find it interesting. Like, you go out there and you see yourself as a genuine, honest person. And even though you got to lie and stuff when you're out there, but when people don't see you as a genuine person, you're sort of like, how are they following this person?
Yeah.
You know, that's not genuine and it's so obvious.
Tell me about it, mate.
Just
we've touched on, okay, like this whole lazy edit. Did it grind your gears as much when they were all saying, like, when Lockie's like, oh, he's just sitting there in the shelter, and like they tried to crop out the other people, but the shots clearly showed there were like legs and arms and everyone all around him. There were like 8 people in that shelter. Like,
it is humorous. I love the little snippets they get. But you know what? That's a representation of life. That's how petty we can be.
So, yeah.
You know, people come into a workplace and they go, take a look at Gerald. He's using my coffee mug. Gerald is using my coffee mug. He hasn't even asked me. How dare he? He's a pig, like that. And, you know, they're real petty about things. So it is interesting. It is interesting how they do that, but we all fit stereotypes.
Yeah. Just touching on Ziggy, she kind of like took center stage at Summer Tower's strategy. There was this kind of battle over her vote, and you know the show did a really good job of selling it that she was, you know, thinking about it and that she was on board. I noted that she never really committed to it in the confessionals, and that's always a kind of a glaring red flag that it's not going to happen. But you know, what was your whole take? You know, she's saying with Lockie, like, oh, you know, yeah, he doesn't do anything. He's lazy and all that. But
yeah.
I do feel like that's just Survivor 101. When someone says something, you just agree with them. So
it's like when people think people are nasty to people out there because they say stuff behind their back. One, that's what Australians do.
Yeah.
And two, if someone goes, oh, he's so lazy, you don't go, no, he's not. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You know, oh, you're wrong. Like, we're against you.
Yeah.
You've got to keep your options open, and I reckon the ones that do those subtle lies are the ones that generally go a little bit further because they do it so easily.
Yeah.
And that's why she's getting a bit of a purple edit at the moment. But Odette does it really well. She agrees with people. She just agrees, and she does it in a real subtle way.
Yeah. Right. Well, Ziggy was getting the purple, but she's out. She's been part of the story. What did you think of, you know, this? So we vote out Tara. We're told we're going to go do another vote. And Annalise does her vote for Lockie. And then Ziggy comes up. And Ziggy holds up the piece of paper. She does
the Hunger Games, like Katniss Everdeen, you know, like a volunteer's tribute to yell out, you know, who was going. Like, when she did that, I thought, massive props to you.
Yes.
Like, that is a game player there.
Ziggy,
that is
awesome.
I am playing within the rules of this game to make sure that the Alliance knows I'm with them and this vote isn't going south.
Yep.
I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it.
It was
so good.
It was so good. I loved it. Ziggy deserves real credit for that. And it is further proof that she was never intending to flip. She was always with the AK side and that she was selling Tara and Lockie a bill of goods there. That was not real.
I just wanted that when AK went up, instead of yelling at Annalise, he should have just yelled out, Velcro wallet, Velcro wallet, like that. And that would have just been just as good.
I would have been voting Tara's sparkly belt. Like, can we vote that off the aisle? I know. I thought that Ziggy was great. It's like emergent gameplay. Like you said, she's playing within the rules of the game. And, you know, many people might not know, but when people get up to vote, you are in complete lockdown. You are not allowed to talk, look at anyone, touch.
Yeah.
You are in and they bring, you know, probably shouldn't be saying this, but they bring people out to watch you. You are not allowed to have any form of communication. And what did Ziggy realize? That when you go into the voting booth, you can say what you want. And you can speak at whatever volume you want. You can do the Crystal Cox, you know, vote, I'm voting for you, blah, blah, blah. You can do what I did to Sue last year and no one can stop you because that's your little 30 seconds kind of thing. It was great.
Sure is.
If you were Annalise, would you have defected during the day to the AK side?
Yes, you got to keep yourself in the game.
Yeah.
Like at that stage, she knew that she was on the bottom with that three and she seems a little bit more malleable, you know, than a Lockie because it's really clear that it's polar opposites and he's not budging. He's going down with that ship and the same with Tara. Whereas Annalise, get off that ship. You might not go for another two. And by then, law of averages, you're either getting a crazy tribe swap, which we got, or you're merging, or you're swapping. Like, this is where it's day to day. Like, you, it is day to day. You've got to do whatever it takes to just get to the next tribal. That's why I'm so opposed to throwing a tribal, like throwing a challenge, because you put yourself in risk. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Like, you never know that you've got the numbers. No one ever does. Like, as much as you think, it's all on hope. Like, oh, you just got to not, don't go to tribal. That's how you win Survivor.
I think that Annalise was completely outfoxed by Ziggy in every way this episode, because she didn't defect over because Ziggy made it such a compelling argument that she was going to go with them. So she didn't feel the need to defect. And because
Ziggy's very switched on.
And
she's
then Ziggy
switched on.
And then Ziggy does the calling out of her name, and Annalise goes home and she says, like, you know, I wish you'd worked with us. And you see Annalise go, I wish I had too. She even says that they subtitled it. So I think she would have had mad regrets. But hey, look, she landed softly. She landed nicely in a sanga. I want to talk about Exile Beach. Evan, we're on a tribe together. I vote you out. You go to Exile Beach. What is your reaction?
Yep. So you're saying that you've voted me out?
You're out. I put your name down. Sorry, Matt. You're gone.
And I go to Exile Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And are you there? Are you there with me? Do you join me later?
Am I just maybe? But you're there at Exile Beach. What is your reaction?
My reaction is, one, how good is this? I'm still in the game.
Yeah.
Like, I would be thinking, this is the best gift since being cast on this show.
Yes.
Like, this is the best thing that has ever happened to me, and that now I can go over, and from my knowledge of Survivor, that floating piece rarely goes first, because people often say, oh, just get rid of them. No. Someone's angry.
Exactly.
Someone's
being
over there.
Opportunistic, yeah.
And you become a number, because everyone looks at you like, oh, they're going, but just not now.
Yeah.
We'll get them next time. And next time doesn't come a lot of the time. So I would be thrilled. Like, oh, Exile Island. Oh, my God. Like, man, you get a second chance.
Yeah. They were so sad.
Man, I felt sorry for them.
I also felt sorry. It sucks.
It was opportunity, though.
It sucks to be ousted from your tribe. But I walked into Sinapu, and a little interesting side note, that beach or Exile Beach is actually Sinapu Beach. So last year I did the exact same thing, voted out and went to the exact same beach, except I cartwheeled into that joint. They looked like someone had just slaughtered their puppy. They were crying. And I'm sure that if we spoke to Annalise and Tara, and I will ask them about this, that they would have, you know, felt like they were, you know, out, going to go see their family, you know, it's all over, blah, 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 and then you get ripped back in. And, you know, I understand that,
But perhaps, though, their trajectory was not as abrupt as yours. And what I mean by that is, emotionally, you know, Tara felt like she was going for a long time.
Yeah, true.
And then it happened, and then it's the grief of that where it's like, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it hits you hard. Whereas you, it was like, oh, my God, like, I'm gone. And then you're like, no, I'm not. You know, like, so I think theirs was a slow burn.
Yeah. Well, you're so wise tonight, Evan. You are so wise.
I always am. And this is why, you know, some people think, oh, he's just a funny guy. Like, this is why I was put on. Like, I'm pretty switched on, people. All right. Switched on.
I think Annalise is dealing with it really well. Like, she says that, you know, we have to be careful how things are perceived. That's currency in this game. I feel like they were both crying. You could see their eyes were puffy in confessionals and stuff. And rightly so, they deserve to be upset. But I think that Annalise was able to kind of kick back into gear a little quicker than maybe Tara would have been. But I think they both did such a good job. And I haven't credited Tara a lot this podcast because I feel like there's been a lot of holes in her game. But she did really well. And so did Annalise to put themselves into a good position back at Asanga.
Yes. Yeah. And they had a choice to make, and they could have picked, and they could have gone horribly wrong. I think they went with the right one, and it's going to project their games a little bit further. Indeed. And, you know, it's ironic, man. People say, oh, don't play on emotion. Well, hey, Tara's doing everything on emotion, and she's going a long way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then all you need is just a few things to go right for you at the right time. You know, Sandra Diaz, like, she plays on emotion nonstop. Like, it can be done.
I what would you have done? So you said that they made the right decision. What would you have done? You're faced with this, you know, you go to a Asanga, clearly, you know, they're not going home. They're in this position. You could see them drawing the sound. We've got the oldies on one side. We've got like the Kent, Jackie, Odette, that kind of coalition on one side. And then we've got the Luke, Jericho, Michelle, Sarah kind of is a floating piece. You know, what side do you go on?
Well, I'm telling you right now, brother, it's all about tone of voice.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Jackie, I really liked her game, but she has a tone of voice that would be a little bit commanding. Okay?
Yeah.
And then when Kent took Annalise off, his tone of voice was basically like, and his body language, you're coming with us. If you don't, you're in trouble. And tone of voice is massive in Survivor, and people don't think that it is, but – you know, when you approach it in a certain way, and some people just have it naturally. I don't think that Jackie is a mean person or puts on a certain tone deliberately, but sometimes how you speak to people, it's more what people hear, not what the words you're saying. They don't really care about that. It's the tone of voice.
Yeah. It's,
and that's what, you know, from our season, what Phoebe did really well, like her tone of voice, I look back at it and it infuriated me. Her tone of voice, because I was like, you are putting something on or you're just completely lying to me. But then when I was out and I watched what she did to everyone else, her tone of voice sucked people in.
Yeah.
Like it's so important. And I think that from that conversation with Kent, that was a bit of a turning point. If I was Annalise, I'd go, I don't like this tone. You're not telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Brad Culpepper lost last season because of his tone of voice to Ty. Like it can be as simple as a few moments, but how you sound to someone.
That's a really good point. And
like, you know, you guys, like I disagree with you and I always will to my grave, but you guys didn't vote for Lee Castledine. But I think a lot of the times you didn't like his tone of voice.
Yeah.
And how he spoke sometimes.
More complex than that, but okay. Yeah.
I think it goes a long way, tone of voice.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely onto something. Kent's like, he says to them, you know, if you come with us, you won't just have to survive tonight. You'll survive a few more days. Like, but then you get what Michelle.
What do you say to someone that you'll survive a few more days? Like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I'll come to you. Yeah.
Then we have what Michelle says, and Michelle says, you know, I feel like I've bonded more with you guys than I have with the people who have been on my tribe. And I think that was really telling. I really thought there was the Jackie thing we haven't even touched on, and Jackie goes home and she was a bit of a loss for the season because I think she was good. She gave some really funny one-liners. I really loved her Monopoly confession. She won the DQ award last week, and we'll get to that again this week. But she was trying to say that there are no alliances, and I just think that is so ridiculous because Mark has just gone home. And if there are no alliances, then we're voting on the other thing, which is physical ability. And if Mark's gone home, clearly there are alliances. So, Jackie, that just never going to work.
Yeah, but in fairness, man, you know how it is. Sometimes you just say stuff because you don't want to rock the boat. You know, I remember, man, when I went, one of the last things I said was, I'm not really worried about numbers at the moment. I always worry about numbers, but I said it, you know, because I thought that's what I had to say.
Yes, you have to say something believable.
I know.
They were very quick to flip on Sarah. These people came to play. They are not mucking around. That plan shifted to Sarah so quickly. I was very impressed that they tried that. I thought that was a good move because Sarah's someone who I think is going to do some damage in this game. And I thought that was really interesting how they switched it so quickly. But this whole idea of a song is strong, you know, last week we did a few, Evan, you're a teacher, right? I got my English teacher on and I talked about a few of the little metaphors that were in the show. We had Luke kicking the hornet's nest was a metaphor and he got stung.
Yes.
This week in Nick's metaphor of the week, we have the burnt Asanga flag.
Man, it was just screaming at them falling apart, wasn't it?
Wasn't it just like a gift from the Survivor gods? They're talking about Asanga strong, and then the tribe flag burns in half.
Or was it Jackie biting off more than she could chew with the rice, my friend.
In what way?
Well, Jackie was having the rice and Michelle's like, she's eating all the rice. She's not even feeding us.
Yes.
She's biting off more than she could chew in a powerful position.
That's a good one.
You know, when you look back, you go, at the start of the episode, Luke said Jackie's going home. Jackie ate too much rice. She bit off more than she could chew. Henry went. It was one of the most obvious boots we've had.
See, guys, if you want metaphors, if you want to know about literary analysis, you come to two teachers. That's who you come to.
And I can hardly spell my own name. But, you know.
So, look, Jackie gets voted out. At Tribal Council, there's this talk about floater talk. You know, and they're talking, you know, I think that was some hardcore Christy Bennett bashing. What do you think?
What was the comment? The floater?
Look, there's a lot of talk about floaters and they say, you know, oh, we don't want someone to just float to the end and win. And then they were like, yeah, well, floaters can do that. I voted for Christy. I support Christy, you know, but I do believe that that is topical on people's minds because the winner of last season. And I think that's where they were going with that instruction. I think that Jackie could see the writing on the wall and she was throwing everything she could. And one of those things was, hey guys, have we thought about this? And like really just trying to throw everything. So good on her doing that. Was Christy a floater? Sure, in some regards, others she wasn't. But I feel like that was directed with Christy on the mind.
Well, you know what? If we're being honest, in every series of Survivor, there are floaters. So
yes.
I don't know if it was a real, you know, I know that Jackie does like Survivor. I don't think it was particularly like a personal thing towards to say, hey, it was Christy. But in hindsight, it's not the worst thing to say because I do know that the majority of people that were fans that watched it were not happy with the winner of last year. And like, so when you go out there with fans and everyone's probably sat around and talked about what they liked and didn't, then you've got to throw out and play to people, hey, do we want someone to float to the end? It's not the worst thing to say.
No, it's not. I'll put an asterisk on that, Evan. I think that the casual fans were angry with the end, and a majority of the real Survivor fans were more pleased. I don't think anyone. Even me included, was like overwhelmingly happy with the end of our season. But I definitely think it was a casual versus super fan thing.
See, do you know what's really interesting? All of my super fan mates did not like how last season ended. Yeah. Interesting. Like, so.
This is a debate that will rage for.
it will. And you and I sort of need not a boxing ring because that's what Lee and Sam would do. But you and I, and you know, Lockie and Mark would do that. We would need a ringmaster like Luke.
All right, Evan, I want to get to some questions. We had a lot of questions. We're going to try and get through a lot of them really quickly because I have a game that I want to play with you. And it is a little bit of a quiz game that the audience at home will get to play along with. So you happy to play a game later?
Oh, absolutely. It sounds like it's an introduction to a Saw film. So I'm a bit frightened.
Let's play a game, Evan.
I know. I'm a bit scared, but yes, we'll do it. Let's get through these questions and attack that game.
All right, awesome. Okay, so first question is, Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. says, what parallels do you see in the American and Australian casting? And what are the similar archetypes? But what archetypes has Australia failed to adopt? I think that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I would say that the similar ones we're seeing probably this time is we get a little bit of a beige. We don't get as hard-edged. So what I mean is, like, you know, like AK, you could say he's slightly Russell Hantz-ish, you know, but he's not evil. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
getting the gameplay side of that. You know, Henry, we're sort of getting a bit of Tyson vibes, you know. But he's not as sort of hard-edged as Tyson. So I suppose we're not getting at the moment we're not getting the Parvati at the moment. You know, we're not getting that archetype at the moment coming through. But maybe that will come across. But it's a really good question. I do feel like, you know, Australian Survivor is American Survivor, but just not on steroids.
Yeah, I feel like we're missing that kind of completely on steroids, like whack job that is like, you know, we don't have the whack job. Like, we don't have the Philip, we don't have the coach, the Debbie, those, you know, I thought that we were ready, like, for season two to find someone like that who is just a complete nut. I feel like that's maybe what we're missing. So good question. Good question, Michael. Always coming through with the goods. Nick Fishman says, do you think the move, Henry's move, was one of the dumbest in Survivor history, or at least in Australian Survivor history? Let's keep it into Australian Survivor history. Do you think Henry's move was dumb? Because it was certainly risky. We've covered that. But was it dumb? I guess maybe we'll need to see what happens to figure that out.
Yeah, I it's too early to say that it's dumb. Like, well, you know, like, it depends how he explains it. Because, you know, if he moved because he thought he and Jackie were big threats, and then he can go over with an idol and he's away from her, and he goes to a tribe that looks like they're going to win every challenge from here on out, then it was a very smart move. I don't think it was dumb.
I think that I like using Rob's measurement of what's dumb, as in, like, the closer it gets you to winning or losing, it's a dumb move. So if you're, you know, behind door A, I think is how he's explained it before, is behind door A, you do this and you win. Door B, you do this and you lose. And that's the dumbest decision, the dumbest Survivor move. So to do something like on day, you know, 20, where you still have an idol in your pocket, probably not. Mm. But what would you say are the dumbest moves of Australian Survivor? Because I think there are two other things to consider. Nothing like, you know, the door A, door B situation, but what would you say in both seasons?
Wow, that is a really big question from both seasons. I found in our season there weren't any major moves. To be honest, I don't think there was any, like, real grand dumb moves or super smart move necessarily. I would say that potentially a not so smart move, and people might not see it, like Flick led to her own demise by going up to Al and saying, we're going to get rid of one of you and Lee. Like, at that stage, maybe that wasn't the smartest move. I don't know if it was dumb.
That's probably just more like a calculated mistake. I feel like the dumbest move would, you know, we've got Tarzan giving away the idol because he could have saved himself. But that's, you know, I think he knew what he was doing there. That he knew he was going home. I think that probably the dumbest move would have to be Rowan. That, like, he essentially, not the fact that he gave Phoebe the idol, but that when he gave Phoebe the idol, he didn't vote the way that he was supposed to, and he essentially voted himself out. So I think that probably.
I thought Ro was still going anyway with that one.
I think that had he been able to stay with the three, I'm not sure. All I know is that Rowan's in the conversation.
If those two people, if Christy and Kat didn't flip and they stick with what Rowan thought was his alliance, his idol to Phoebe would have been brilliant.
Yes.
A lot of
moving parts on that one.
I don't think it was the dumbest move. Maybe not having tight enough pants was a dumb move, but you know,
you're so nice tonight, Evan. I feel like I'm so mean tonight. You're just like the nicest guy ever.
Well, you know, maybe I've got to get my street cred back up again. You know, I'm not really liked by most people, maybe I've got to build it up.
Lightning round, okay? Is shaving your balls on Survivor a good idea?
I don't think it is. Wouldn't it grow back? You could get an infection. You could get, like, rashes. What on earth was he doing? I love the man, but leave him alone.
Patrick Tormey says, who's playing a better game, AK or Henry?
AK, based on his position from where he started.
Excellent. Which tribe is more, Clayton says, which tribe is more physically intimidating, New Samatau or the massive new Sinapu from last season?
Oh, Sinapu from last year. That was so heavily weighted in one way. It was ridiculous. You had puzzle kings. You had physical threats. Like, male and females were both physical. It was incredible last year.
Edmo also asks, did Henry get Jackie voted out? Was it Henry's fault?
Yes.
Good. where are we? Where does Kent go from here? Graham wants to know. Does he stand a chance with the tribe mates he has left?
Kent goes to the nearest Samoan bush and fashions different budgie smugglers. Something that covers them up and conceals everything that we've been saying. Kent's stuffed. I don't know where he goes from here.
Yeah, I don't see Kent surviving very far. Christopher Bozzilieri asks, if you had to bear hug any survivor during a challenge, male or female, Australian or US, who would it be?
Oh, wow. It would be... I'm going to say Jonathan Penner, because I love what that guy's about.
Yes, I would love to bear hug Jonathan Bennett. I'd love to bear hug Stephen. Stephen's my favorite survivor of all time.
But would you be able to hug, because both of your noses would bounce off each other? And I love Fish back though. Like, don't get me wrong, he's been a crush of mine for a long time.
The last question is a really good one. Marbor Bower asks, after seeing the AFL challenge, can you and Evan come up with other Australian-themed challenges? So I want to explain this to our international viewers. The challenge, the final immunity challenge, the one where Jackie went home, where they were wrestling, it was kind of like a take on basketball, where they were wrestling about and then someone had to kick the ball from the little platform into the little kind of TV screen hole. That's Australian rules football. That is called AFL, and that is essentially just someone kicking. That's, you could see AK, he lined up and did the little kind of the two-hand signal, which is, and the waving of the arms. That's what goal umpires do here in Australian Aussie rules when you get a goal. And I loved that. I thought that was so cool seeing.
Yeah,
that.
It was very. We just needed our best announcer, Bruce McAvaney, commentating. You know, AK lining up. Is he going to do it? Really? Goal.
So what's some other Australian themed challenges?
I think a bindi challenge, running from one side of grass to the other with bindis, barefoot. Bindis are those real nasty spiky bits of grass that stick into you while you run across, and the grass would have to be searing hot. I would say also maybe a challenge could be going into another tribe with a plate of food and there not being enough seats and that awkwardness of Australian barbecues. And perhaps we could see something like that.
What about some sort of throw a boomerang to knock over a West End tinny of beer from like a list, kind of like carnival game, kind of knock over as many tinnies as you can. Dez would love that.
LP going, then collect the tinnies, swim across on your back, do a belly flop, then get out of the water, and with those tinnies, make a Foster's emblem puzzle piece.
So good.
And when you're done, swim back to your Holden. Lee Castledine will pick you up.
Oh, great. There's one question from me. Did you think that the scissors and the tweezers in that little package were an actual idol clue?
No, I was hoping they weren't.
Yeah.
I was hoping they weren't, because that's just stupid. Like, that, make them find it. Like, they just put it right there.
I think
make them find it.
That was like, so funny that they all scrambled around and shoved it in their jocks and then later ended up being tweezers. I love that. Whichever production member put that on that table, they knew obviously what people would have thought it was. They deserve a raise. It just was funny. It was funny.
They do. I hope one of Henry and Luke actually keeps hold of the packaging though, so they can use it later.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Mm. Evan, would you like to play a little game?
Yes, I would. I would. I would absolutely like to play a little game or a large game, whatever you'd like the game size to be.
So another massive shout out to Shannon Gates, my Survivor Know It Oz intern. She comes up with, you know, we brainstorm throughout the week. We come up with these little games and she goes out and executes them. And she does a great job every time. She has created a game called Historical Events.
Oh, wow.
Events.
Yes, okay. I get it because my name is Evan. And
did you get it from the way I was pronouncing it? Yeah, okay, cool.
I get it. When I was younger, people used to give me Christmas cards at kindergarten and spell my name E-V-E-N, not A-N.
Well, perfectly spelt the title E-V-A-N-T-S.
I really appreciate that because it's something I haven't got over from a very young age. So I appreciate that.
So we talked about Survivor archetypes on Survivor. I feel like you and I would fit this kind of Survivor nerd, fan category.
Yep.
So we're going to put that to the test.
Oh.
We have gathered a series of questions inspired by the episodes this week that bring us back to Survivor history. So if anyone out there plays along with This Week in Survivor History with Jordan Kalish, which is one of my favorite segments on iHeart, this is like our own little version. So we've got seven questions here. You need five to win.
Oh.
Let's see how you go. You ready to go?
This is so much pressure, and I really have stalled on my history of Survivor, even though I know a lot. It's not like I've been studying it of recent, so I'm hoping I can pull it through.
Well, Evan, just to add even more pressure. The game that we played with Rob won, and the game that we played with JO won. So,
Oh, my hat. For the love of Probst, get me through this.
Well, play along at home, guys. First question. Like Tara and Annalise this week, last season Nick was voted on to another tribe. How many votes did he receive?
Oh, come on. Are we really that serious? I was more throwing stuff at my TV thinking, why did I not get a swap? Okay. So that is very, very interesting.
You get a 10-second time.
Okay. I'm going to say six.
The correct answer is five, unfortunately.
Oh, man. The card says moops.
Okay. Number two, how many episodes of last year's Australian Survivor did the contestants go to Tribal Council and not actually send anyone home?
Okay. So there was one when Kat went and should have gone home, but Pistol Pete went. So that's one.
Correct.
There was the one where they did the tribe swap.
Correct.
So that was two. And then I'm thinking towards the end, was there another one? I know they were the two that were awful, but no one went home. So I'm going to say two.
Incorrect.
Oh, man, come on. What is there, three?
Five?
Pete
quit. The swap with Connor and I. There was the kidnap of Sue where no one went home.
Oh, my God, that one.
The final six reward and final tribal council. But if you'd gotten four or five, I would have given you the correct answer.
Okay, I got two, so don't give me anything.
Okay, well.
Does this mean I need to get all of them from here?
You have to get all of them from here. Are we ready?
Oh, my. Here we go.
Okay. This episode, two people from each tribe were chosen to swap to be in the minority of another tribe, much like the swap in Survivor China. Which of the following people was swapped in that season? Jean Robert, Eric Huffman, Shireya Lloyd, or Leslie Neese?
My hat. Oh, Jean Robert was quite polarizing. Didn't go as far as he should have. Oh, no, man. This is going to kill me. It's screaming to me, Leslie. That's what it's screaming to me.
Is that your final answer?
It is.
Incorrect.
Hit me. Who was it?
Shireya.
Man, that
I'll give you
me.
One chance. I'll give you one more chance. Ready? This week, Jericho put out the fire. Which one of these survivors has put out their campfire in the past? A, Russell Hance. B, Brandon Hance. C, Jatia Taylor. Or D, Ty Trang.
Well, there's a Brandon threw out the rice. Russell had his stuff burnt. Jatia went a bit nuts. Ty's too nice to do that, but I think Ty did. I think he was angry with someone going. I'm going to say Ty.
Correct.
There we go.
He's back. All right, let's see.
I'm back, baby.
You're back, baby. Okay. Who was the Annalise sent home second in a tribal council in Survivor Cook Islands? Ready? Number one, Rebecca Borman. Number two, Jenny Guzon Bay. Love you, Bay. Number three, Christina Correa. Or number four, Stephanie Favor.
Oh, I love this season too. I love Yul. I love them all. Beck got to the end. Wow. Give me the other three.
Jenny Guzon Bay, Christina Correa, or Stephanie Favor.
I'm going with Steph.
Incorrect, Evan. It was Jenny Guzon Bay.
Damn it. She was the first one that came to mind, man. Oh, man. You've picked out season 13 and season 15. See, I know that stuff.
Evan, you have officially lost Survivor historical events. How do you feel?
I feel great about it. It proves that, you know, that if you don't know people that got, oh, my Lord, oh, wow.
that was second,
and oh, wow. So, listen, it's good. We're all human.
Well, Evan, we have something that we can redeem yourself here. We have the DQ Award, which is one of my favorite new initiatives here on the podcast. And this was named after the great Des Quilty. This is the third award we're giving out. The first award went to Kent. The second award went to Jackie. And now I need you to help me pick who gets the DQ Award for this week. This is the funniest, most entertaining confessional. Would you like to hear the options?
Yes, play them to me.
Excellent. Option number, where did it go? Hold up. Option number one, Kent says, Ben spent more time looking at himself in the mirror than all the girls combined. Luke found the need to shave his testicles. I'm not sure why. I found that a bit strange. I've got rid of that terrible beard. Do I look young and hot? You may tell I'm a little bit hyper because I've had sugar. That's the first one.
Okay.
The second one is AK saying, if I've read the game correctly and the votes lay where I've put them, I'm going to be back at camp tonight, still not helping with the fire. And our third option is Lockie saying the whole tribe was just sitting around and then Yoga Pants and Sideshow Bob came walking up the beach.
Ooh.
Evan, which is the winner? Who gets the DQ Award this week?
Gee whiz, there's something about Kent, but, I really do like lookalikes. You know, that would be something that I would have said. It would have been ironic if Lockie said, oh, look, it's the devil coming up in Sideshow Bob, not Jesus. No, I'm going to go with AK because he said it just matter of fact. Like, yes. I'm still not going to be helping with the fire. Lock it in with my boy AK.
That got a huge reaction with the group that I was watching with. Love that. AK, well done. Your first official DQ award of the season.
Well done.
The last thing we need to do is we need to award a player of the week, and I think I know where you're sending yours. The player of the week, the Danzy, who's the best player?
The best player is my boy, Luke. He was hands down the best player. Hey, he was the only one that got someone voted out.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like, and he's been waiting to do it for a long time, and when the opportunity raised, he did it in a very subtle way. I back him in. He is my player of the week. Good on him.
Excellent. Well done, Luke. Congratulations, you win the Danzy this week. Evan, that brings us to the end of the Survivor Know-It-Alls for this week. I want to thank you so much for coming and joining me. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for how nice you were and how bad you made me look.
Hey, I can't wait to be the Jonathan Penner of Survivor Know-It-Alls when I come back for a third time.
Does this mean that halfway through I'm going to get you medically evacuated?
Potentially, or you will get me bamboozled by a sort of Tyler Perry style idol and I'll flip my mind and do whatever you ask me to do.
Say my ass.
And then like a snowflake's chance in hell, I will depart.
Well, I look forward to having you back on the podcast. I know everyone loved hearing from you. We need to give out a hashtag so that people can let you know and let me know that they made it all the way to the end. Have you got any suggestions?
Hashtag teachers are us.
Oh, yes. We used that last time on Know-It-Alls. Let's bring it back. I love it. Teachers are us. It's our alliance that never was and could have been so much.
Could have been so much.
Evan, thank you so much. Everyone out there, I want you to find – Evan, what have you been up to? I know that you've got a podcast out yourself, an AFL podcast. Would you like to tell people where they can find that?
Yeah, absolutely. So first things first, I do like talking to people that love the show, even if you're not a fan about how I went about things. I really love talking to people. So you can get me on Instagram, which is a bit of a play on Seinfeld. It's a Vandalay Jones. So that's Evan, DELAYJONES. That's on Instagram. Send me a message. I'd love to have a chat. Apart from that, the Back Pocket podcast, which is an AFL football one, got a big following in America, though. So all the expats over there listen to it, which is really good. And you can find that on soundcloud.com. You type in thebackpocket.com or on Facebook, The Back Pocket. That's a lovely green logo with my beautiful eyebrows in the logo and my good mate Jamesy. And we'll entertain you because we look at it as a humorous take. And we're coming into the finals, so join us.
And if you don't know anything about AFL football and you had no idea what was happening in our challenge in Survivor this week, listen to The Back Pocket and you'll be all prepped.
All prepped.
So thank you so much, guys. Hit me up on Twitter, at Nick Iadanza, Instagram as well, same thing. Let me know, hashtag TeachersRUs, that you made it to the end. And we will see you all in a couple of days. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be speaking. Tomorrow I definitely will be speaking to Jackie. Hopefully that'll be up for you in the next 24 hours. And we'll be back next week. I can't tell you exactly who is going to be on the podcast because I'm still trying to finalize it. But let me tell you, if I can get this person, you will be very, very happy.
And holy mackerel.
I will leave it at that. All right, guys. Take care, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Evan. Catch you later.
See you later, brother.